Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Trailblazers preseason has come to a merciful end. And I'm ready to trade everybody except Anthony Simons. Of course, once again, I am joking. But although the sky isn't quite falling, there appears to be a little crack. It's just like the little crack in the little A that Tom Cruise was protecting, that his mom loved so much in Risky Business. It could be trouble, but we don't know yet. Anyway, I'm Aaron Fentress. I cover the Trailblazers for the Oregonian and Oregon Live. This is the Blazer Focused Podcast. I'm George, joined by my co-host, Craig Bernbach. We are brought to you by Zoom Care, which I said last Zoom week Care. I was going to get a flu shot, and I did. I was in and out in like 4.5 minutes. It was amazing. They do a great job. That's why it's called Zoom, and you get the care. But anyway, Craig, this team went 0-4. Forget the game against the team from Israel. They mopped them up with nobody. It was 130.
Doesn't count.
Doesn't count. But this team, 0-4, giving up 119, scoring under 100 per night. It just didn't look very good. I'm trying to find a way to spin it, and I just quite can't. Maybe just a little bit, but what say you?
So I say I love your Risky Business reference. I would say that if the Blazers season is anything like that movie, I'm not sure what that means, right? There's a lot of ups and downs.
But a lot of fun.
Yes. So that would be good. There's no way to spin this as a positive other than no one got hurt. You know, no one got hurt. I mean, but that's huge, right?
Success.
I came down to the two things. One, Damian Lillard looks like Damian Lillard, health wise, like that we wanted. He seems, though he didn't play great, he seems healthier. And no one else got hurt significantly. That's it. That's the only positive spin. Everything else, and we'll go through kind of the list. Everything else was not good. It was like, they lost every game. They played a lot of their starters against some people, backups. Their backups played against backups, and they lost. They lost everything. Like they didn't even have a good half. There's not a lot of positivity that we saw on the court defense, and we'll talk more about it. Jeremy Grant, yay! But yay. No. You can't spin, going 0-4 in the way they went 0-4, coming off the team. If you're the Golden State and you went 0-4 with what they went through with Draymond and stuff, you'd be like, who cares? The Warriors backups beat the Blazers last night. Backups, so that's not good. It's not good.
No, they beat the Blazers starters.
At times, yes. No Damian Lillard, though. I'm just giving him that. But yes.
Yeah, if you tell me, okay, I got to sit Damian, but you're going to sit Steph, Clay, Draymond, Poole, and Wiggins, I'm winning that game.
You should.
Winning the first half.
They did not.
They got smoked.
They did. And it looked bad.
It looked bad.
You're like, what is that? What is that? Who is that shooting that three? Like, why do they have confidence and swagger? They might not make the team. And then
I came away from that game looking up dudes from the Warriors and trying to buy their rookie cards because they looked amazing.
Amen. Wiseman's going to be adult. You know, he's going to be a perennial all-star. There's no doubt.
Okay. Well, so yeah, it wasn't good. But again, it was preseason. I have a little preseason stat. So someone brought this. Justin Myers, my man over at iHeart, brought this up. He said, hey, the Kings last year went 4-0 in the preseason. Of course, they finished 30-52. But I went and looked, and the final four teams last year, Golden State, Dallas, Miami, and Boston, were a combined 16-3 in the preseason. Boston went 2-2. So you can't say it doesn't mean anything. That said, you know, Billups talked last night, and he said, hey, the preseason, you know, it's about experimentation, lineups, different schemes, et cetera, et cetera. You just sort of let things go and see how they play out. Then you figure out what you want to keep, what you don't want to keep. They're going to shorten the rotation come, you know, real games. So you're not going to see certain guys receive as many minutes or minutes at all. And of course, I'm saying this part, Damian Lillard averaged 15 a game. He needs to be a guy who's going to average 28 or so anyway, probably. I just can't imagine a Damian Lillard led team with this roster, if he cared and they cared, it would have gone this way. So I don't feel like this is a team destined to look as bad as they did last year when they were tanking, which is sort of what they looked like. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and we'll see what happens next week. Although my factor Fentress is going to point to the early part of the season, and they had better get their bleep together in a heartbeat or they're going to be in big trouble.
I agree. They go 2-1. The first three games, we'll forget about the preseason. You know what I mean? Like 3-0 and it means nothing. But it's just, this is what we got. This is what we're talking about because this is what we've seen. We don't get to see practices and we don't get to, you know, be in the coach's room to see why they're not concerned or they are concerned. None of this matters until it does. Right now, what matters is kind of what we hope to see. And what we did see, right? And that's what we can discuss today. And no one's going to get an A.
We're getting out our school marm ruler. We're going to have to whack some behinds. Real quick, though, I wrote about this. I'm trying to find the article because the numbers are scary. But I wrote about, I compared where they were right now to last season. And statistically, it's the same team. Like, it's here it is, statistical trends. Go on to OregonLive.com and look for Portland Trail Blazers repeating many poor statistical trends from last season. And this is the part that scares me. Regardless of losing all four games, et cetera, it's just they don't look any better, and they have way better talent than they did when they were tanking and when Dame was hurt, et cetera, et cetera. But statistically, they're the same. So here, I'm trying to find the numbers here. So they're shooting 41%. This is before the last game, which wasn't good. But they were shooting 41.6% and 32 on threes. Last year, they shot 44 from the field and 35 on threes. So they were better last year, despite all their problems. The Blazers committed 18 turnovers per game and 23.3 personal fouls per game to start the first three preseason games, not counting the Israel game. Last season, they ranked tied for fourth in the NBA with most turnovers at 14.5. So that was fourth most in the NBA last year, and they were averaging 18. And I think they had 17 last night. And they had third in fouls last year at 21.1, and they were averaging 23.3 going into last night. I could just go on. Here's another one. The Blazers allowed 115 points per game last year, which was tied for third most in the league. They were last in defensive rating. This year, going into the other night, they were at 115.3, and they gave up 131. They're up to 119. So statistically, they are dramatically, in some areas, worse than they were last year when Dame was hurt for most of the season. CJ had a collapsed lung. They traded a bunch of people, and they were tanking. That is what's frightening.
Yeah, you just scared me.
Are you hiding under your blankie? Are you hiding under your blankie?
Well, you know, honestly, you know how I feel. I live and die with the Knicks and the Blazers. I root for the Blazers because it's fun. You know, I live here and it's fun. But no, I don't. No one wants to. You know, I don't want to sit here and talk to you about a team that looks anything like last year's team. That wasn't fun. Like, we had to make, you know, and a grumpy, a happy Fentress isn't always a delight. A grumpy wow. Fentress is definitely not a delight.
Wow. Hey, I've been delightful so far today.
So far you have. Nothing matters.
You just put me in a bad mood. No, I'm kidding. All right. So so earlier in the season, before the season started, I wrote a series of articles on the five musts for this team to contend, which is pie in the sky, but still, here are five things that had to happen for them to have a chance. And so we're going to go through these and see where we think they are right now in terms of meeting these musts. Now, I've altered it in my article I'm writing, that's going to post later today, where I'm saying now there's five must things they need to have happen to get above 500. I've lowered my expectations down from contending to just being above 500. All right. Number one, Damian Lillard must return to MVP caliber Dame. I'm giving this an incomplete because, of course, he was not in a position to do anything like that. He played in three games. He obviously is not going to play 35 minutes in a game. He's not playing to win, right? He's only playing the first half mostly, and he's out there just working through things, not looking to win. We won't know if he's back to being MVP caliber Dame until we see him drop a 50 on somebody. He averages 40 in a week, 35 in a month. That all said, not a very good start for Mr. Lillard, although he did look healthy. He looks quick again. He looks better than he did last year when he was hindered by that core muscle injury before he had surgery in January. However, during the preseason, he shot 39.4% from the field. Last year, he shot 40.2. He shot 33% on threes. Last year, he shot 32.4. So his shooting percentages are in line with what they were last season. Two seasons ago, he was an MVP candidate until injuries took their toll in April. And that year, he shot 45% from the field and 39.1% on threes. That is the Dame Portland needs. We have not seen that Dame yet, but it's only been three preseason games. That's why I give it an incomplete. And you give it a?
Well, I changed my grade as we speak, as you spoke.
I gave it a B.
So we did this independently, right?
Right.
Fentress made the list, and then you just convinced me that I was not looking at the full picture, and I was grading on a curve. So I gave him a B because he came out and he had a heartbeat, and I was just excited, you know? And he looked fluid, and he looked strong, and he didn't look slow. But I think after listening to what you said, yeah, that's not – he gets a C. It was satisfactory. Like, he's Dame Lillard. He's on the court. We didn't come off a summer where we saw him in the Olympics, clearly not very, you know, not playing like himself. So, yeah, it's a C because you're right. We did not see even like a quarter of a moment of Dame time, right? Not that you're going to see that maybe in the preseason, but yes, I think that this is the best part of the Blazers preseason, and it's still a C.
Yeah, and it's hard too because when you're dealing with shooting percentages in such a small sample size, it can, you know, he makes one more three and he jumps to 39%. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So yeah. I think he was, did he only take eight? He took more. Oh, that was his highs. Anyway, so I'm looking at this new stat page that the NBA has, which is pretty awesome. But anyway, that's why I say incomplete because I just wanted to see him, you know, look. Not just physically like Dame, but just dropping trays on people and, you know, doing some funky step back stuff and doing what he does. Yep. And we just didn't really see that. So I'm going to say incomplete and give him the benefit of the doubt. So.
All right. Next up, we go to the man in the middle, the man who, one of the men who got paid, the Bosnian beast, Jusuf Nurkić. Did we see him living up to the contract? And of course, it's a ridiculous thing to do in the preseason. But that's what we do.
Insanely ridiculous.
Right.
But what else am I going to write about when they're on the road with no access?
I feel bad even talking about it. But I gave him a C minus because, yeah, defensively it wasn't good. He had some bonehead plays again. He's silly fouls. He got hit in the face at his normal rate, which is high. Yeah, I didn't see. Look, he looks like he's in, you know, decent shape, like from whatever it says. But I didn't see anything to say that we won't have the same ups and downs that we've had before when his contract was a lot smaller. So when you say living up to the contract, he's got to be better. And I didn't see signs, you know, he didn't pull the LaMarcus, you know, you remember that preseason when LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, shot like 8 threes and it was going to change his game, which it, later on with the Spurs, it kind of did, but we were like, oh no, he's going to shoot threes and it's going to be great. he didn't even do that at a rate in which get me excited. So yeah, I give it in that C range.
Okay. I gave him a C as well. Yeah. I mean, look, okay. So 13.8 points, 6.3 rebounds. That's in 20 minutes per game, over 30 minutes that, you know, extrapolates out to 20 points, 9 rebounds. You would take that all day. 50%, I mean, that's sort of what he's been for his career. So that is what he is. I think you'd like him to be 57 since he's around the rim so much. But, okay, 50 is who he is. However, he had 11 turnovers, which is ridiculous for a center. One block shot in 82 minutes, really. Winslow had 4 in 35 minutes, and Grant had 7 in 94 minutes. But Nurkic has never really been a shot blocker. You know, I think he averaged 0.7 a game last year. So whatever. But the bottom line is this. I think his contract is fine. You know, the $70 million for 4 years, that's the going rate, I think, for a legitimate starting center, which he is. And the bottom line is he's going to have up and down. Some nights, it's just not going to be there for him. Either the matchup's not right or someone else has it going on. And people get upset with him because he's not doing what they want him to do. But it's just he's not an impose-your-will dominant center whom you're running the offense through, who's always going to get opportunities to be special. He's a role-playing big man who on some nights can get you 20-20, and other nights he'll disappear with 8 and 9. But as long as he does the little things, you're going to be fine with that. So I give him a C. He's average performance, and I think he's a slightly above average to good center in the NBA. So,
yeah, he's not. Here's what he's not. Jokic. Right. And that's why he's here.
Right. He's a poor man's Jokic. He can do a lot of things Jokic can do other than shoot threes. He can't do them consistently or at the same level that Jokic can do. So you're not going to run the team through him that's just disastrous. Yeah. But he can. I mean, he can be a very impressive passer. And he, around the basket, sometimes he's on. But, man, he misses a lot of easy shots, as we all know, inside. He doesn't quite have that elite level touch. And he's not going to shoot threes, hopefully. So, yeah. He is what he is. If you accept what he is and just know that at least you have a 6'11" big guy who on some nights can be dominant, I think that's better than not having anyone who can be dominant ever.
Yeah, and right? What were your choices? You know, like for the money that you paid, exactly. It was you were going to get him. But again, you know, we're talking about two different things. Now, like you said, are they going to be a 500 team or are they going to contend? They could be a 500 team with him being at a C. They can contend if it's bubble Nurkic. Or, you know, post-trade when he did 30s and 20s, you know, like,
exactly.
And that's, you know, but that's a dream, right? Like we saw that little sign. That's not going to, you know, odds of that happening are at this point, not great. Cause the further you get away from those, you know, those performances, the more you realize that's the anomaly, not what you see on a day in and day out.
Exactly. All right. Number three. Jeremy Grant has to improve his shooting efficiency from what we saw in Detroit, where he was the guy. I believe he was going to do just that, coming to a team where he's not the guy, bouncing off of Dame and Ant and having a Nurkic, a good passing big man. And so far, so good. 53% on threes, 8 for 15, shooting 48% from the field, and 13 points per game. More importantly than that, defensively, my goodness, 7 block shots and 5 steals in limited minutes. He is all over the place. He is a finisher. He can lead a fast break. He can defend every position legitimately. I am thoroughly impressed and completely believed before he was a perfect fit and more so now. His rebounding, 2.8 per game, but you and I have had that discussion before about whether or not he can rebound versus whether or not he seeks to rebound. I would like to see him get more, but you know, we'll see how that works out from a team standpoint. But man, I love this fit. Hey.
Yeah, I gave it a B+. And the only reason why I gave it a B+ is because they didn't win any games, right? So I felt like you can't give A's. So I lied when I said that Dame getting this, you know, the Dame thing was a C in the highest grade. Yeah, I mean, Grant was, he was the most, he was the best highlight consistently. You know, he had some blocks on fast break layups that just, there's so few people, even in the NBA, that can make that block, you know, a track down block, just pure athleticism and timing and not fouling. That stuff looks great. His hustle. I mean, he was playing with guys that he won't be playing with, right? And he was playing in against backups, and he didn't care. Like, that's what I love about him. He doesn't care. He plays at one speed, and he's got skills. It's B+. I'm right now. This team's got a lot of problems. Jeremy Grant is not one of them, in my opinion.
100% agree.
The next one, I'm so excited to hear your grade on this. Simons filling CJ's shoes. And to me, it's as much about, unfortunately, like in this, you know, the last game against the Warriors, didn't get to see his chemistry with Dame and how that works because Dame sat. So to me, it's as much about that chemistry and him finding his role and his niche. And I don't see, and he admitted it to you. You wrote a great article where he's very honest about it, that he's still searching. He doesn't know where it is yet. I don't worry about his skills because, you know, gosh, he could shoot, he could jump. He's all the reasons why you're the fanboy you are for him. because, you know, there's no denying his skills. But what we don't know. I mean, I gave it a C. I think an incomplete here, to be fair, just because Dame didn't play, you know, that many minutes and didn't play a whole game. But yeah, I'm not sitting here completely convinced that this is going to work better than the CJ Dame thing. And I'm not even convinced yet that it's going to work as well, because when they did play defensively, it wasn't better at all. And offensively, they haven't caught their groove yet. So I think a lot to prove on Simons filling CJ's shoes.
Well, not only did I give Anthony a higher grade, I put him on a Doogie Howser fast track to a medical degree. That's not good. Risky business and Doogie Howser. Am I aging myself?
How old are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Millennials are like, who is it? What is he talking about? Doogie Howser, okay. What?
Because I am the seasoned veteran journalist that I am. And I've covered everything imaginable in hard news, sports, etc. I was able to step outside of myself and take Aaron Fentress, the fanboy, as you call him, and tie him up in the closet and shut him up and sit down and look at this objectively. And I gave Anthony a C-.
Oh, now, there you go. Fair.
Now, it's impossible to truly gauge how he is going to fit in that clutch realm that CJ had and that adult, you know, I'm a grown man playing the NBA and I know what I can do, I know what I can't do mode that we saw CJ reach as a professional player, because one, Simons is still pretty young, but two, it was a preseason situation where just like with Dame, you're not needed to be that or do that, right? You're just playing basketball. And then, like you said, in the article I wrote, he talked about still adjusting to, okay, I was the guy for 2 months. I could do whatever I want. Now I'm playing beside Dame. He's the point guard. He's the lead guard. But when I get the ball, am I acting as a lead guard with him as a two guard? Or am I acting as a two guard and I'm just trying to score as a true two guard usually would when they get the ball? Or am I trying to find other people cutting? Like, he's just dealing with trying that, figure out that mindset, which is understandable. That all said, he shot 34.1% from the field. Not good. 37% on threes, though. He picked it up after a slow start there. But you want him hitting those two-point field goals. Last year, he was at 49%. This year, 5-for-17 so far in the preseason. Oof. So, yeah, I mean, those things need to improve and get better, obviously. But, you know, I think he's going to be fine, small sample size. But he didn't shoot well. And, you know, you want to see signs that he's going to be the ant that he needs to be. And we didn't see that. So therefore, as much as it pained me, I gave him a C-.
I'm both shocked and excited to see your objectiveness.
But are you proud? Are you proud?
Oh, no. You're no.
No, come on.
I'm not proud. I'm not proud that you're doing your job. Come on. I'm not going to be proud about that.
You have no idea how painful it was for me to do that.
The last one on your list is fix the defense. And I certainly am being very kind here. I gave it a D. And I don't know why. I didn't want to give anybody an F. Maybe I'm a wimp. I mean, it's not good. It didn't. There was no points in time where I was like, oh, other than Jeremy Grant's awesome, and that's why I didn't get an F. You know, like, I just feel watching him do things on defense that others can't do, you know, I'm going to give it a D and hope that GP2 changes things, but it was bad. In every game that mattered and against some, some NBA, guys that won't see any time were able to find holes in the Blazers defense. I mean, it's the same old story, right? Open threes, like, and they're making them because they're NBA players and they make open threes. And if you don't figure out a way to have, to shut that down, and neither Ant or Damian stop penetration when it mattered. So I gave it a D. What about you?
I mean, I gave it a D as well. No pun intended.
We didn't talk before this. This is odd. So much agreement.
We didn't. I mean, look, there were a lot of big scores around the NBA. So sometimes, things got out of hand and you have people playing who aren't going to be playing and this and that and the thing, blah, blah, blah. But, at the end of the day, they looked as bad defensively as they did last season when they were taken, And so I think you just, we're just talking about seeing some signs. Now, the first game against the Clippers, they only gave up 102 points. Clippers shot only 38%. They did a good job, even against the starters with Kawhi out there and Paul George and John Wall. So there were some signs in that game. But Utah, not pretty. Oh, my God. The Kings just ripped them to shreds. Keegan Murray was amazing in that game. De'Aaron Fox, Sabonis, etc. And then, of course, the Warriors B team took them to school. I don't know how many. They had 50 points in the paint or something like that. Anyway, not good. But, again, preseason, I will give the benefit of that, which is why I didn't go F. But I'm going to call it what it is. It was not good. And these are, it's on Billups. I mean, this whole thing was all about Billups and fixing the D when Olshay made that hire.
Yep.
And so now he has Hart, Winslow, Jeremy Grant, three guys he wanted. They're going to get Payton, whom we'll talk about in a little bit. There's no reason for this team. I don't think there's any reason they should improve at least 5 or 6 points per 100 possessions and be in that 111-112 range when they were 117 last year with the tanking. We'll see. And then, if this team gets off to a bad start and it's because the defense can't stop anyone, then that little crack in that egg, that egg is going to splinter into pieces.
I want to simplify what you said. If your defense can't improve in a big way over a team that tried not to win, you're in trouble. I mean, that's the simplest way to say it. They tried not to win last year, and their defense was horrible. If your defense isn't significantly better on a team that's trying to win, the coach needs to change something. So that's the given. And if Chauncey Billups can't coach defense, there's no reason for him to be coaching over Terry Stotts, who we know could coach offense. So 100% need to see it, and rather quickly, right? Because I think that patience will grow thin, not just in the fan base, but with like Damian Lillard and we know Nurkic, when things don't go right, he tends to vocalize the decision-making he doesn't like.
Right.
And that's being a nice way of saying he calls out the coaching. So you don't want to go in that way, for sure.
I think there's going to be some growing pains still. But again, you don't want the growing pains to be 119 a game. You want the growing pains to be, okay, we're at 114, 115 defensive rating, trying to get up to 111. you know, you just, and that's not good. I mean, but they were 117 last year, so it's a little bit slightly moving in the right direction as you're trying to figure things out. But you just don't want to be a situation where you're scoring 118 and then you lost 128-118 because you just can't stop.
You can't give up 120 points to the Kings in the opening night. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not going to be good unless you score 130. And that's, you know, against the Kings. I mean, because you do that and you go, what are you going to give up against the Warriors?
Right.
So that's what I mean by fast. Like, you just don't want to start out 1-4 or, you know, or worse and giving up, you know, 115 plus in every loss. This team's not going to win 98-92. Like, we're not trying to be crazy here. Mm-hmm. But you got to win, you know, 112-108 every once in a while. You know, you just have to.
Agreed.
All right, let's pick it up. Pick up the pace. Go fast break topics. These are topics that we just kind of, you know, we zip to the rim, lay them in, give our points. Shaedon Sharpe, you know, since last we talked, where he had done nothing, he dunked all over the team from Israel. They had no answer for him. They better not. And then he had some really athletic, nice moves against the Warriors' D team. So, you know, all I'll say about Sharpe is that there's no doubt why they drafted him. And that's what he got to showcase. That if you walk in and there's an open gym of good to very good players, that dude is going to jump out at you. And that's what happened. That's what we saw since last we spoke. What we haven't seen still is when the best players in the world are on the court, can Shaedon Sharpe jump out at you? And probably not yet, but at least it was nice for fans and people like us to see, oh, okay, I get it. That guy's gifted. Like, right, that guy almost hit his head on the rim.
Right.
That's elite.
Hey, the athleticism's undeniable. The body control. The most impressive play I thought during the preseason, and I tweeted about this, he went into the lane, met two guys in the air, so it's contact, had the strength enough to, as he was starting to fall, adjust his shot and flip the ball off the backboard and into the rim, into the hoop. It was beautiful. And it was like, wow, that's special talent. That's what we're talking about. The alley-oop dunk from Keon Johnson, his ability to step back and elevate, get fadeaways off. Just his footwork when he's spinning in the lane or doing whatever he's doing just to get separation. He clearly is a gifted cat, but he's 19. He shot 34% from the field. He did actually shoot. No, he only shot 20% on three. Sorry, I was looking at Anthony. He gave me 11 rebounds. You know, he did a couple steals here and there.
Yeah, honestly, in the minutes, the minutes he played against who he played, stats didn't, to me, didn't matter. What mattered is exactly what you said. You're like,
he looked the part.
Damn. Exactly. Like, that's what happens. You go, damn. Like, he passed the damn test, you know? And that's why they drafted him. That's why he was seventh overall pick without playing a minute of college basketball. Because if you watch this guy playing against, you know, talent that's up to very good, you're like, damn. You know, so that's what we're going to see eventually, is just how fast do we get there?
Yep, 100%. So what'll be interesting with him is how many minutes he gets in the regular season, given the depth at his two positions, shooting guard and small forward. Small forward has been settled in terms of the starter. It is Josh Hart, which was announced before the Kings game. Winslow and Nasir will back him up. Winslow and Nasir will also play some four. And, of course, we'll see some Jeremy Grant three. There's a lot of positionless basketball going on there. So we'll see how Sharpe fits into that. But what do you think of Hart winning the job? And what do you think this means for the rotation?
You know, it just made sense in the end. You know, I don't think it's what they wanted or that it's necessarily the best thing that this is the result, because Nasir Little stepping up and making it a no-brainer to pick him, I think would have been the best case scenario. Little admits he's not, you know, that he's not 100% yet, back to where he was pre-injury. I think Winslow gives you just his ability to play, you know, multiple positions in the front court, gives you just more flexibility. So it made the most sense to go with Josh Hart to start. You know what you're going to get from him. He won't have to score on that lineup. He'll push the ball. And I thought it was a cool, you know, interesting that Billups said he'll rebound and we'll need that because you and I are, you know, discussed whether or not Grant can or can rebound or, you know, why he hasn't in the past. Well, you know Hart's going to get rebounds at that position. So it made the most sense. I just think that they would have been a lot happier and in a better place if Little looked better, but he just didn't. I mean, I don't know how you could have started Nasir Little after his performance unless he was killing it in practice. Unless he was killing it behind the scenes. It was, to me, Josh Hart's job because flexibility-wise, Winslow being able to play more power forward and to, you know, come in and help you there at the three or the four makes the most sense.
Yeah. You know, Nasir, shoulder injury, surgery, and then early summer, late spring, he had the core muscle surgery. Same thing Damian had, same thing that Peyton had. And he just, you know, that all set him back. You know, it just did. And I think eventually he might become the starter by Christmas. Who knows? You know, I agree with you that he might have been ideal for a lot of different reasons. One of them being, it would be nice to have Hart coming off the bench at the three or the two. And they got rid of Brandon Williams. So Hart is pretty much your third point guard. It's interesting. I think it's kind of fluid, but Billups loves him some Hart. He loves energy and the Hart he brings, pun intended. And so it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, but I think it's still kind of fluid. And, you know, Hart could start, play 23 minutes, and Nasir could come off the bench and play 30 one night or multiple nights.
Yep.
All right.
So I got to ask.
Yep.
the SAR height. Like, is it real? Like, I got nothing. I got nothing.
Is it height? Okay, so
I'm just saying, people are like excited on Twitter, like, and I'm like, this guy's a keeper and he's got to play. And, you know, I'm like, I don't know. What do you know?
He played 30 minutes. You know, it's not like he played a ton of minutes. He didn't do anything necessarily special. He's definitely pretty athletic. He does protect the rim a little bit better than Nurk. He's 7 feet tall. You know, I think that's the thing that people are excited about. It's like, a seven-footer. We need height. He was coming off the bench to replace Nurk before Eubanks the last couple of games, which tells me that Sarr's probably won that job. They'll announce the final roster in the next few days here. But of the guys left in camp beyond the top 14, I mean, Sarr's the only one I think has a chance to make the team. And if he's coming off the bench before Eubanks and playing more minutes than Eubanks, then stands to reason that maybe he's already beaten out Eubanks. He's played more minutes lately, not for the entire preseason. But, you know, we'll see. They could just keep 14, though, or they could release Eubanks and keep Sarr. Who knows what they're going to do there. But I think he's an athletically gifted guy who has some ability, and why not keep the seven-footer who's athletic? I don't see why you wouldn't, unless you feel like there's going to be another option later, or if you feel like you want to keep that roster spot open for trade purposes, or if you think you're going to be able to just get someone else later down the road. But I think he has a shot to make the team.
And so if he makes a team, Eubanks doesn't, right?
If they want to stay at 14.
Yeah.
They can keep 15, which is the max, and Eubanks can stay. Whew. So, you know, we'll see. Again, it all depends on how they want to deal with the roster. But that's where that stands. And then last but not least on our list here, Gary Payton II hasn't played a minute because he was recovering from that dreaded core muscle surgery. My goodness, that thing is just sweeping through the Blazers roster.
It's like an epidemic.
But he is your defensive stopper. He's your closer like in baseball. When he comes in, he locks fools down. Could he be a game changer for this team, especially on defense?
So the thing about that, and I put this on the list, is that there's only one thing that could like cure this quickly, right? Is if somehow GP2, him being on the court, changes the dynamic of your entire defense, because what we saw, we gave it a D, right? So he's the added ingredient that's not out there. I think I was honest when the trade came. Signing came. I love Gary Payton II. I loved him at Oregon State. I rooted for him to make clubs when he wasn't. I love his energy when he's in the game. And obviously what he did for the Warriors help them win a championship. I just didn't love the signing because I don't think GP2 got a lot better. I think he was always who he was, which is really good and fills a role. And I think that he did it on the best team in the world with the best offense in the world and other really, really good defenders. You know, two of the best in the world. You know, Draymond Green might be the best team defender that the league's ever seen. I know it's a crazy thing because Bill Russell is, so I'm going to take it back right away. But he's one of the best team defensive players that we've seen in a long time. And, you know, I don't know. I'm excited to see, to be proven wrong, and to see that Gary Payton II is a guy that's going to get, you know, 25-plus minutes a night and going to be a factor in victories. I just know last year at this time, you could have had him for nothing. And he earned his contract playing on the Warriors, which is a unique position that he played on a unique team. So I'm worried about it.
You're worried about it. Well, yeah, I don't think he fixes the entire defense by himself, but I think he definitely will help.
Can't hurt
there.
Can't hurt.
Yeah, I mean you. I still believe that Payton, Hart, Winslow, Grant, the addition of those four guys over CJ Powell, Covington, Nance. Like I think it's going to be a better defense. I really think it is. How much better? We'll see. But I do think it's going to be better. He's going to be a big part of that. So I'm not going to say game changer, but I'm going to say definitely impact player. Because he's going to change the mentality of things, too. Like, he's just going to alter the way they go about doing things when they're on the court. And I think it'll be infectious as well. And if he's demanding, if he has a strong personality, and we all know he's there in part because Dame wanted him, he's going to be able to get guys, you know, rear ends and get them to get rolling or get out. So we'll see. But I think it's going to be big deal, but not necessarily yet a game changer.
All right, you're more optimistic than me. I'm hoping that you're right now because I love him. You know, obviously get to see him at Oregon State this whole time and love watching him play defense the way he does. And yeah, I like that he's like the tallest 6'2" guy in the world, as Steph Curry said. All right, it's my favorite time of the show. It's time for Factor Fentress. This is when Aaron Fentress says something either outrageous that can't possibly be true or
that genius,
or gives us some insight on the future of Blazers basketball. So what you got for Factor Fentress?
Okay, so I've been looking at the schedule because I have to figure out which games I'm going to go to. I'm going to travel to probably half, depending on how well they do. But at least, you know, 17 to 20 games. And I was looking at the first 13, and it's really kind of scary. And so my theory right now is that, and this is splitting hairs a little bit, but I think it's interesting. They have to go at least 5-8 in the first 13. And I think that's going to be dicey. If they go anything worse than that, season's over. And here's why. So they start out with Sacramento, very winnable. Then you've got Phoenix at home, at Lakers, Denver, Miami at home. That's Miami and Phoenix are obviously finals contenders. Denver's has Jamal Murray back. That's a really rough start. Then you got Houston at home. You should win that one. Memphis, that's going to be tough at home. Then you got to go to Phoenix, Miami, Charlotte, which was over 500 last year, the Pelicans in Dallas. That's your 13 games. And that's with 8 of them on the road. If you come back from that at 4-9, again, we're talking about one game difference, but the problem is you come back for 3, Spurs, Utah, you should win those. In between, though, Brooklyn, which is scary. And then you go back on the road for 4, Milwaukee, Cleveland, your Knicks, and Brooklyn. So, and then you come on for Clippers and then go to Lakers. So my point here is that month and 2 weeks to start is nasty. If you start 4-9, how am I going to believe you're going to climb your way out of that with the rest of that schedule and not at the end of the month be 10 games under?
Well, let me just say, if you can't beat any teams, you're not going to be good. So, like, I get that you know they're NBA teams. If you expect to be a playoff game,
No, they're not just playing NBA teams. They're playing high end teams and a lot the road.
But if you can't,
and my point is, if you can't go 5-5-8, and that's being nice. If you go below that, you're not climbing your way out of that. And when November ends, you are going to be 10 under, and it's over.
So what I'm going to say is, it's fiction. Because if you can't make up one game like that, just it's one game.
Well,
you're saying that if they come back 4-9, they're done. If they're 5-8, they're okay.
Yes.
Right? Is that what?
Yes. It's splitting hairs. I admit it, but there's a big difference between 3-under and 4-under and 5-under at that point. It's 3-under versus 5-under. That's the thing.
I'm not gonna
3-under versus 5-under.
I get it.
That's a big deal.
Too early to make that. I think they're in trouble. Yeah, I think it's not good either way. But I don't think you're done just because you're 4-5
You're 5 again. It's not the 4 versus the 5.
I get it.
It's the 3 versus the 5.
But you win 2 in a row and it's different. So here's what I'm going to say about the beginning of the season. And I looked at it. They play their first 7 games. They play 5 home games, and they play at the Kings and at the Lakers. Now, the home games are tough. They're Suns, they're Nuggets, they're Heat, Rockets aren't tough.
Memphis.
And they're the Grizzlies.
Right.
But it's like if you can't go 500 at home against whoever you play, if it's not the same team, like if it's not the Warriors every night, like you're not going to be much better. You're not going to be a very good team. You got to win your home games in the NBA against good teams. Like if you can't beat the Heat, who are coming across the country at home, and you're not good. You know, you're not.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah. So if I'm saying if they're 5-8 and 4-9, I don't think, I mean, I agree that, you know, 4-9 is worse. Like I could do some math. I'm just not going to write them off because of that one loss. I'm just going to say there's going to be an early test to see those games at home. When you play 4 games in a row at home, you play the Nuggets, the Heat, the Rockets, and the Grizzlies. If you go 1-3, you're not a playoff team. Bottom line, you're not going to make it only beating the Rockets. You're going to have to go 2-2 at the worst. And the NBA is full with good teams. So I think either way, I see what you're saying, that 5-8, you know, that could be a big deal in the long run. If they figure it out, you know, after they're 10-20, and they figure it out and they go on a nice run, and the Blazers, you know, they've done that, not last year, but we had those sprinkled ins like 10-1 and, you know, 8-0. That has changed the course of their playoff lives during that playoff run. So that's still a possibility. But I just appreciate you going that granular. I mean, I just appreciate that homework there and coming up with that. So Thien, you're gonna have to show up because he did some work to find that one.
But let me make just one more point to you. Like you said, you're right. You got to win at home, and 5 of the games were at home. So if you win 3 of those 5, then you got to find 2 wins on the road against a very, very tough road schedule. At least, if you can't do that, is my point. If you can't do that, then that's a clear sign. It's not just the one game thing, which to me is 500 versus 300, which I think is a huge distinction. It's that you're demonstrating what you cannot do. Therefore, it's difficult for me to buy that you're going to somehow figure out how to do it the second half of the month when you play at Milwaukee, Cleveland, New York, Brooklyn, and the Lakers. And so that's when all of a sudden it starts piling up because you haven't, I think it's going to pile up if you don't show me you can't do anything about it. And next thing you know, at the end of the month, you're 10 games under. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you that.
Okay.
I'm just saying that 5-8 and 4-9, the same thing is going to have to happen. There's going to have to be a switch turned on because 5-8 is not going to get it done either playoff-wise. But, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's a big – it could be a big breaking point if they don't go off and win 2 straight or 3 straight or eventually 5 of 6. So I think we're going to – I mean, I think bottom line, we're going to learn a lot in the first 20 games for this Blazers season.
Absolutely.
All right, Theme. What time? What you got to show up. You hyped up your no look pass. You said it was fire.
True or false, there's a situation where Chauncey Billups is no longer the Blazers head coach after this season.
Ooh. Going big early. He's not playing games. We haven't even played a game yet, and he's throwing it out. So I'm going to answer first because it's easy. There's always a scenario where a coach gets fired. Always. Yes. So, of course, there's a scenario where he gets fired. It's going to have to be hard because I don't even know who fires the coach, like with this Blazers team. Like, just, you know, who does it? I don't know.
Is it
right?
Jody Allen? Is it Bert Cole? Is it Cronin? Is it Damian?
I mean, so, but yes, of course. And that's not even, I mean, Ime Udoka got fired, right? He went to the finals. That scenario, never in a million years could I create in my head. So always in a scenario that you get fired. But if we're just talking about on the court, absolutely, there's a scenario where somebody, whoever it is, just says, hey, we're 5-23. This is clearly not working. And, or, you know, Damian is, and, you know, and his head coach can't get along at all. They're fighting, definitely a scenario. I mean, I'm assuming you agree. I'm not saying it's going to be easy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Cronin's a new GM. He didn't hire Billups. He has said he was on board with the hire and that those two were in lockstep. He's also brought in three new assistant GMs, two heavy on the analytics side. Billups is not a proven coach. The only evidence we really have of anything positive was from last year when they started to turn things around. They were 10-8 despite Dame playing the worst month of his life. And then the abdomen kicked in and then CJ went out with a collapsed lung and everything fell apart. We can't really blame Billups for that. And then those four games they won leading up to the All-Star break after they had made all those trades. And you saw how amazingly well they played together with Ant, Hart, Winslow, Nurkic, and Watford coming off the bench. Like, it was just wild how well they played. Those were two positive signs in his favor. But the pressure's on now to turn things around because he's got guys he wanted. And if he doesn't, if come, you know, the All-Star break, they're 12 or 15 under, and they just feel like, look, we have better pieces in this, maybe Chauncey wasn't ready to be a head coach, then maybe they could do something either then or at the end of the season. I think it has to go through Damian, because if Damian's not happy with what's going on but doesn't believe it's Billups' fault and you fire Billups, you're alienating Dame and then he could ask out. Or if Damian says, yeah, you're right, this isn't working, then they get his blessing and they move on. Or maybe they say, you know what, we don't care what Damian thinks. We're going to do what we want. If Dame doesn't like it, we'll trade him. You know, who knows? So, yes, there's definitely a possibility, especially in this league. My God, we see people get fired for the craziest thing. You win a championship, you be coach of the year, like in Toronto. You're coach of the year, and then you're out. That happens all the time in the NBA. You're out within a year and a half of being coach of the year. So, yes, I agree. 100%. 100% there's a possibility.
Let's hope not, because that's not fun.
No, let's hope not. I mean, I don't want to deal with another coaching search or firing. And look, seriously, I truly believe this. If things are so bad that they feel like they have to fire Chauncey, start the Dame watch.
Oh, yeah.
Because unless Damian knows you're about to bring in the second coming of Phil Jackson or Steve Kerr, I'll use him as an example, then why is he staying? If he doesn't like the coach you're bringing in or can't see why he's going to fix things, why is he staying when you're firing the guy that he helped select? So start the Dame watch immediately.
Can't say you're wrong there.
Yeah. That's the first time today. All right. Anything else you want to add before we get to the regular season?
No,
we
got a
Wednesday regular season game. Then they come home for Phoenix. So yeah, going to be interesting. I'm excited to see what happens. I don't like the length of a season necessarily, but I like the journey of a season to sort of see where things go and how the ebb and flow of a season, as long as it's compelling and they don't fall to pieces like last year, I'm all for it.
Can't wait. Go Yankees. Oh, sorry.
All right. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, which you should, leave a 5-star rating and a positive review in the Apple Podcast. Tell a friend, please. And also tell a friend about Zoom Care.
Zoom Care.
I go routinely for pussy fingers that need to be lanced and flu shots. They there do a smashing job. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back. We'll be back soon. I think, are we going to do like an official season preview before Sacramento? I think we probably should probably maybe do that. You think? I think that'd be good. Our official season breakdown. We'll go game by game on the schedule.
Oh, gee, Willie.
I'm just kidding. All right, thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.